Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Lord love a taco, we've got Johnny Walker.
Hello and welcome to Rewatchability. We're part of the Entertainment One podcast network. I'm J.M. McNabb, joined as always by...
Robert LaRonde.
And we have a special guest filling in for Blaine this week. It's our friend Johnny Walker. Hey, Johnny.
Hello.
The new Blaine.
Yeah, I've often thought of myself as such.
It's funny because last week we literally said, why don't Blaine go away and just call Johnny? And then we just did that this week.
It's funny. Also,
give the people what they want.
Yeah, who are those characters that everyone hated on Lost that they just like buried alive?
Oh my God,
that's what happened
that's so
with Blaine.
Cruel.
Okay, well, if you've never heard the show before, each week we rewatch a movie or TV show and then talk about it, see how it holds up today. And this week we're actually going to do things a little bit differently because it's not a movie we're talking about. It's not even a scripted narrative TV show.
No.
For the first time, I think we're talking about a talk show, a formative talk show that came in the late 90s and early 2000s. It had a big impact on some of us. This has been brewing for years. Like, I remember seeing Johnny in person, like when we actually saw people and interacted in public spaces. And we talked about maybe doing this on the show. And I should say the topic is The Rosie O'Donnell Show, which began in 1996 and ran until 2002. And yeah, we just started talking about it and kind of like all of these different like weird memories of what happened on the show started popping into our brains like a fever dream we half remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you remember it?
It was a long time ago too. I mean, I feel like that was pre the E1 studio days, right? Like,
could have
I think
been.
We were just at your house.
It might have been in this depressing basement that I've been relegated to.
I feel like it might have been in the midst of when there was that really sort of epic Batman string of episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That's a long time ago, though.
That was a long time ago, yeah. That was when
when
Blaine and I were neighbors. That was a weird...
Yes, yeah.
Weird time. But, okay, well, let's...
Was Blaine a bad neighbor?
Well,
he went over to borrow a cup of sugar. He was like, I don't know, man.
No, he was a good neighbor. Well, let's do what we normally do and go around and talk about when we first saw the show or our kind of earliest memories of the Rosie O'Donnell Show. Johnny, let's start with you. What do you remember about Rosie O'Donnell?
Oh, wow. I think I was on board from the start with this show. I think I must have been watching it from pretty much the moment it began. I believe it began during the summer. So that made sense because I was never like a camp kid or anything. Like I was at home during the summers. And if there was going to be... Also, I feel like that was the era where there was rarely ever new television during the summer at all. So the idea of there being a show that you could watch that was something new is like a bit of an event in and of itself. And then it was always on, I believe, at 4 p.m. So even after when I was back in school, I remember it was kind of my like after school ritual. Like I'd get home, I'd turn on the Rosie O'Donnell show, maybe microwave a Jamaican patty, and as a little sort of, you know, that sort of like meal that teenagers have in between lunch and dinner, and watch Rosie be Rosie. I was so on board. I felt like I was charmed by her. I thought she was fun. I was so excited for her when things like her interviews with Tom Cruise or Barbara Streisand happened. I found her enthusiasm really infectious. And yeah, I don't know. I just feel like she was into all of the kind of gay theater shit that I was into. So I was like, yes, like bring on the cast of Cabaret to do a number. I want to see that. Bring on Bette Midler for your Halloween party. Like, who? That's what everyone wants.
What about you, Rob? Did you watch the show when it was on, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did. I think I was a little bit more reluctant to. It was on, I remember, just after I came home from school. And usually, by the time I came home from school, my mom was already watching TV. We only had one. And she was usually watching the Rosie O'Donnell show. I think I would have preferred to watch something else. Maybe there was a Simpsons on or something like that. But I did end up watching a lot of the Rosie O'Donnell show. And sometimes I liked it. Sometimes it wasn't for me. But there are moments that I remember. Like, I remember seeing the Titanic musical performed on the Rosie O'Donnell show, and I was like, that's weird. There's a musical of the Titanic. But she was a really big booster of that particular musical for some reason. It was a big show, but it was more of like my mom and my sister's thing. They enjoyed watching it, and you know, it wasn't really for me as a 12 to 16 year old boy. I was interested in things that I guess were like more masculine and
you're also really teeing up me to talk about my enjoyment of the show. Yeah, it's funny that you say that though, because I was prepared to say like that wasn't my experience at all. Like even, you know, like the people who were maybe more insecure with their masculinity, like Rob here, like super into the show, because when we were kids or like, you know, early teenagers, like most of us weren't staying up to watch like late night shows. So this was like a late night show that we could all enjoy. So my experience was like everyone watched the Rosie O'Donnell show because that was the sort of talk show for kids. I remember like one when I was in junior high, one kind of like bro-y kind of like tough guy dude was talking about how he saw Hanson on it. And, it, you know, very heterosexual, very like, yeah, like macho, played football kind of guy, and never heard of Hanson, saw Hanson, and was talking about how hot the keyboard player was. And
classic.
It is a trio of young men, and he did not believe us.
A lot of us were fooled. So
that was what an interesting rite of passage that was for straight boys coming of age in the late 90s to have a confusing crush on Taylor Hanson, yeah. Whose name gave you no favors, true. To be fair.
You had to subscribe to Tiger Beat to get the lowdown on the...
They should really have included their pronouns in their bios or whatever.
Yeah. Well, they're still a band.
Taylor Hanson was super pretty, though. It's fair.
Absolutely, yeah. I wonder what that guy's doing now. If I could remember his last name, I could.
I think they're still in Hanson. I think Hanson's still a band.
No, no, I meant the guy from my school. I know Hanson's still a band. But as for me, yeah, like I watched the show, like you, Johnny, every day after school. Like I said, it was the way that we kind of digested entertainment as kids or entertainment news. Like, I mean, there was, you know, the internet was very early. So like, if you were finding out about like movies and things there, you know, you had to watch like Entertainment Tonight, or in this case, like the Rosie O'Donnell show, if you weren't going to stay up and watch the late night shows. And it wasn't something I immediately latched onto. Like, I remember being kind of weirded out by it at first. Like, I didn't hear about it before it hit the airwaves. It just, all of a sudden, it was on TV, and it was like, oh, it's the woman from, like, the Flintstones and A League of Their Own, and, like, not someone, like, I thought about a lot, or I don't even think I knew she was a stand-up. She just all of a sudden had a show, and it was also so jarring to see, like, the late night show set up, like, you know, with the desk and the chairs and the band and all the hallmarks of, like, a late night show on in the daytime. Like, I remember seeing it and thinking, like, is this like a special preview of a late night show? Is this like, you know, something other than what it was, which was like the late night format in a daytime show for, you know, parents who didn't stay up late, for, you know, for anyone that didn't stay up late, and for kids, and for, you know, anyone who was around in the afternoon, which was great. And I very quickly became a fan. I too remember being swept up in her enthusiasm for things, even if they weren't things I was necessarily enthusiastic about, which we'll talk about. I also remember, like, just, you know, a lot of awkwardness, a lot of strangeness, a lot of ideas that seem weird in retrospect. And that's why, like, when we were talking about it, like, some things I had to talk through with you. Like, I didn't even totally remember what they were, and I needed validation for certain things that I didn't totally know if they happened or not. So it was almost therapeutic to go back through some of these clips online and watch, you know, episodes that I hadn't seen in over 20 years at this point. So let's talk about, we watched some clips online. We've made some notes about some memories we had, and we went back and looked at some of them. Well, let's start with, you know, the Scientologist elephant in the room, which is
absolutely,
yeah, which is Tommy, as Rosie called him, and that's
Tommy. Right. Can you hear me?
That's right. Yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing. She had the electronic songs next to her desk, which was which was
so cutting edge for the time.
It was,
too.
Yeah, yeah. And so she had Tom Cruise on the show. I don't remember how it started, but I remember she always talked about Tom Cruise. And how she had a crush on Tom Cruise, and then it became this thing where he agreed to come on the show, and she had like a big countdown. She had like a Bristol board on her desk, like,
yes,
counting down the days. And so we all watched like the interview. What did you guys think of the big Tom Cruise interview?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I was trying to put it in context. I mean, this is Tom Cruise before everybody knew that he was, you know, a sort of weird cult aficionado. Mm-hmm. He's not a leader. I guess he's a sort of a leader.
Kind of.
And, like, he didn't seem as weird in this sort of era. Like, he was just, like, he seemed very human. And also that he was very playful about Rosie's oversized crush, which I think, like, to most people would seem very menacing, maybe. Maybe this was before, like, he went all the way down the dark path or something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, he still had Nicole with him, for one thing. Maybe, like, keeping him sensible. I don't know. It's interesting that, like, the last time I was on, we were doing Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
Which this feels like almost the missing piece of that puzzle to me.
Yes.
Well, they would have been filming Eyes Wide Shut while they did the Tom Cruise interview. They were living in London.
In the subsequent interview with Nicole, that's what they discuss, how they were, working on that film then.
Yeah.
Because he's still promoting Jerry Maguire, I think.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And I remember now, I didn't remember until this moment, like, I remember when that trailer for Eyes Wide Shut came out and it was this huge, you know, scandalous deal. I remember her talking about it and being like, I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't like Tom being naked in this trailer and everything.
That's an interesting aspect to her and to her sort of, like, beard crush story with Tom, because it's like, it's this super fan crush, but she always stressed that it was non-sexual, even
right
at the time.
Yeah.
She was always saying, like, she wanted him to mow her lawn and give her a Coke.
Right.
Which he actually did in the final episode. I don't know if, you know, if it's too early to talk about that. The closing image of the series.
Oh, that's quite lovely. I like that. I didn't realize that.
He also, I read an interview, like a recent interview, where she said that he still sends her flowers on her birthday every year.
Oh. But now it's creepy because of the Scientology. They come with a copy of Dianetics.
How are you?
Good, darling.
Good
are
to
you?
See you.
Good to see you.
You look real good.
So do you.
Thank you.
I'm nervous.
You're nervous?
I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous. You're my Tommy. Tom? I don't know if you've been watching the show.
Yes.
I gotta... crush on you. You don't mind it, do you?
No.
Does it scare you a little bit? Am I like an inch away from being a stalker? Because I fear that I may frighten your entire family.
No,
it's all right.
They love it.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Nicole's all right with it,
oh,
too.
She knows. Absolutely.
You know, it's not like I want the marriage to break up to me. I just want you to, like, live in my house and mow my lawn. That's all I want. I want you to do yard work around my house.
I find it's hard to, though, for me to even look back at something like that interview now. I remember at the time thinking that it was, like, fun and exciting for her, and he was such a big star, and there was something, like, kind of cool about how it went down. Watching it now, it's like, he's so enthusiastic, and he keeps, like, kissing her on the mouth and stuff. And it does feel, I don't know if it's just sort of like knowing the whole context of him that I'm a bit like, why are you going so hard on this? And there's a bit of an element of it's like, you're working so hard to seem like a human being right now.
They were each other's beards, let's be honest.
Well, right. Yeah.
It was a cyclical relationship. I mean, I don't think that he was her beard. She's even said like now, like that was not... You know, that was not a thing she did to deflect from her sexuality. That was, like you said, like it was just like this movie crush that was non-sexual and just this kind of obsession that she had.
I mean, she can say that. I don't know if I 100% buy that because
I agree.
She was obviously not allowed to mention being gay on the Rosie O'Donnell show.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was an edict that came down. And I wouldn't be surprised if she was also coached to be like, talk about, you know, men you think are handsome in movies and stuff. I think what's interesting to me,
that would be
though,
taking that note to the extreme.
But there's
you must
something...
make one heterosexual comment per episode.
I always find, and I think anybody who's like had the experience of like being closeted to any degree for any period of time is that like you kind of catch other people's tells, and there's a certain familiarity that you see. And I remember even like as a kid, the way that she would stress so hard that her crush was non-sexual, I always found kind of weird because I was like, well, what would it matter if it was? Because you're like a famous person. He's a famous person. I mean, we're used to seeing, you know, talk show hosts be like, oh, like, I have such a crush on this person, like, I'd like to have sex with them. Like, that wouldn't be so scandalous to me. And I feel like the reason that she always stressed that is kind of her own personal integrity. I think that that was, like, the part of her that was like, I will say this, but I am not going to tell such a bald-faced lie as to, like, go on TV and tell everyone that I want to fuck Tom Cruise when I know that I absolutely don't.
Yeah.
You know? I felt like that was her keeping, like, a part of herself true to herself, even though she knew she had to essentially go back in the closet to take that job.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Like, a part of me, like, I just feel like now she would come clean about that, or you know, she's such a frank, honest person, so like, I mean, she certainly never indicated that it was dishonest or you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just, there's something about Rosie O'Donnell that is, even like when she's like cringy or awkward, or it's almost like a family member. Like, she just seems like a genuinely good person who I like. And even when she's saying something kind of uncomfortable or awkward, or I don't agree with it, it's kind of like in a lovable way. So I don't know. Like, I mean, that was something I was thinking about a lot when doing this episode, was the, yeah, like reconciling that, like, cause that crush was a huge part of the show. Like, it wasn't just this one interview. Like, it was, it dominated a lot of the conversation.
It was the through line.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like you said, it was even the last episode. I mean, in terms of her sexuality too, like in that article I sent you guys kind of about the history of the show, I thought it was interesting. Like, she said that she told the, was it the producers or whoever kind of like greenlit the show? She like told them that she was gay right off the bat. And she was like, basically said like, you know, if this comes out in the National Enquirer, I don't want you like coming to me and saying that I like misled you in any way. Like, so I don't know. Like, she just seems like such a blunt person. So it's hard to, yeah, to wrap your head around the idea that she was maybe misleading people to a degree. Or do you think that she was purely doing it as a business decision?
I mean, I think there's an element of performance to it that isn't necessarily misleading. Like, the character, if you suppose that she's playing a character, the character of Rosie O'Donnell on The Rosie O'Donnell Show, then, I mean, it sort of makes sense for her character, right? Like, you know, like a comedy character is usually like a sort of desexualized creature. But, like, she's also playing somebody who is nice. Because Rosie, I mean, on her show, on The Rosie O'Donnell Show, she's the queen of nice. But when she stopped doing that show, when she started doing things like The View, like, all of a sudden, it seemed like it was a different person almost, right? Because all of a sudden, she wasn't putting up with bullshit. She wasn't putting on, like, a cheery, smiley face for everybody. She was being, yeah, way more blunt and way more, like, in your face about her opinions. That wasn't what she was doing on The Rosie O'Donnell Show. That was almost, like, yeah, a different character.
I think that's a really good take on it. And I was thinking something similar. In the interview she does with Nicole Kidman, which is, I think, a couple of days after the Tom one, in that, it's almost, it's a full sort of comedy, like, sketch performance, basically.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. It's, like, I think it's really funny, that interview. And the way that, like, nothing she says in it is sincere. It's all ridiculous, right? And Nicole's like, oh, well, maybe like the three of us could get married.
Yeah, they were gonna start a throuple.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she just immediately, she's like, oh, well, I'd give up the show. The show's nothing, but I'm not gonna share Tom. So we'll just have to wait a few years and see if, you know, your marriage falls apart.
Right.
And which is like hilariously prescient now.
And not at all interested in Nicole, who, as we know from Eyes Wide Shut, has a nice butt.
Good point.
Good point. I'm glad you stuck around for this episode. Well, okay, let's talk about an episode that was the other huge kind of get for Rosie O'Donnell, which was Barbra Streisand. And as much as like watching the Tom Cruise interview was a little uncomfortable and a little cringy, and like he genuinely seemed uncomfortable, and it's also just weird in retrospect, I found the Barbra Streisand interview incredibly moving and like a really great piece of television. And I do not care about Barbra Streisand at all, but you can tell just how much that interview meant to Rosie O'Donnell, even to the point where like we were talking about, and I guess it's kind of notorious at this point, but like as part of the deal to get Barbra on the show, she had to flip her entire set.
Oh, it looks so weird. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's totally against the way that we in the Western world view images,
because we go left to right.
Left to right. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. And but it was to get her quote unquote good side was why they flipped it, and they did it for weeks in advance so it wouldn't be obvious that it was just for Streisand.
I mean, and apparently, like, basically every talk show that she's been on has done this for her, too. And that's one of her demands.
And watching the interview, all I could think of for half the interview was I was just trying to get a look at that other side to see if it was really that bad. And then I was thinking, now this is just done the opposite of what she wanted. And I was like, isn't there like a phrase for like when...
The Streisand effect.
Yeah. It's like, oh, right. It's the Streisand effect.
Of course. And I mean, what I just kept, because, yeah, reading about all of that, it was on my mind as well. It's funny because I remember the set looking different even at the time the episode aired. But I think in that context, I just interpreted it as this is not a normal episode.
I'm in a dream.
She's coming in through Rosie's curtain. She's on the other side. And somehow that switch makes it feel more intimate. I it worked on me. I was fooled. But they put in that episode also so many clips and montages from the entire filmography of Barbra Streisand. And I realized that, like, clearly in all of the movies that she's in, she's always filmed from the same side, too. You right. never see the other side of her face.
She's like Two-Face. Yeah. It's like the other side is just a skeleton.
No, she's a full Harvey Dent, apparently.
That's why her movie, The Mirror Has Two Faces, is such a misleading title. It's got half a face as best. Well, yeah, I just thought, did you guys watch like the lead up to the show? Like not just the interview, but kind of like the preamble and everything?
Oh, yeah. I watched the full
episode. I thought that was really funny when she was, you know, sitting at the desk and she was like, you know, this is the part of the show where I usually just talk about my personal life. She's like, well, I have diarrhea.
That was pretty good.
And then she brought Streisand out and you know, like they both started crying and she was like, I feel like, you know, my dead mother like walked out and it was just so mean. And then I was crying watching this goddamn YouTube clip of Barbra Streisand, who again, I don't like
or
care about in any way. To be honest, I don't know enough to not like her. But my point is like, I was just so invested in that moment for Rosie O'Donnell that happened 20 years ago. Like it was kind of amazing. Like it was, to see someone like on a daytime talk show, which is, you know, usually the haven of garbage and insincerity, to see that like populated by a show where someone gets to like experience a lifelong dream. And I don't know, there was something like kind of magical about that moment. Am I way off base?
No, 100%. I'm absolutely there with you. It moved me at the time. And I was also like, I was probably like 12 or something when that episode aired. And I was also myself a huge Barbra Streisand fan. I had already seen Yentl like multiple times by that point. You know, I'd seen Funny Girl and Funny Lady and Hello Dolly, On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, The Mirror Has Two Faces, all of the like major works. And I would say that if you don't think you've given much time to Babs, she's probably like one of the most talented performers of the 20th century, and it's worth going back and checking out some of those films.
I've literally seen none of the films in the montage that they did. It was foreign to me.
Yeah.
Like Hello Dolly and Funny Girl are just massively, massively entertaining films, and her performance in them and her singing voice, like, it's huge. She's a great comedian. And I mean, as a director too, like Yentl is a pretty huge accomplishment, and it's like a weird, anyway, I think I've made it clear that I had seen a Barbra Streisand film or two by the time I saw this episode. And I knew how much she loved Barbara and wanted her on the show. And I also knew what a recluse Babs can be and how she was often reluctant to give these kinds of interviews. Mm-hmm. And it was always kind of a thing that's like, oh, like, Rosie would love this so much, but, you know, it's probably not in the cards because, like, she has stage fright and she doesn't like doing this kind of thing, and it's probably not going to happen. So, like, knowing that she'd got it and she was going to be this full hour, like, I was so hyped up for it. And I remember crying when I watched it when it aired. And I remember having so much, I mean, still kind of being a kid and having so much energy. And I think like my parents were home. And I remember like I was watching it and they were doing something else. And every commercial break, I was like, I like ran into the other room of the house to be like, this just happened, and give them like the sort of like play by play of everything they'd missed. And I was like, I can't believe anybody wouldn't be watching this right now as it's happening. And yeah, it's just that, yeah, what you're saying, it's just like, this is so clearly somebody's like life dream coming true before your eyes.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, it's hard to not feel excited and happy for somebody that like that could happen to them.
I have to tell you a little self-indulgently that in many ways to me it feels like my mom walking through the curtain, because I have to say that you were a constant...
You're going
to
make me cry.
I'm sorry. I don't want to do anything that would upset you in any way, but you were a constant source of light in an often dark childhood, and you inspired me and gave me the courage to dream of a life better than the one I knew, and I am profoundly grateful to you in so many ways.
And it goes pretty well, too.
It does. Yeah, and she had her back, like, they did, like, a episode not in the studio later on, like a sit-down interview. So, yeah, it must have gone pretty well. I mean, that's something about the show, is it does feel, and maybe it's not to this extent, it's probably not, but it does feel very off the cuff. It feels very natural. It feels like, you know, it doesn't feel like a lot of other talk shows where you're just, you know, going through the pre-interview points and, you know, and then plugging some, I mean, there are plugs, but it does feel like the show meanders, the show kind of lives or dies on Rosie's enthusiasm. And that's why I think the show often does have really weird, awkward, not very good points to it. But I think like the reason why the show is sometimes bad is the same reason why when it was good, it was so good, is because it's, you know, it's someone reacting to things a little more naturally or a little more off the cuff. Though I think it's somewhat deceptive in that regard. But, you know, she did say like she wanted the show to harken back to the days of like the Mike Douglas show, or, you know, those kind of 60s and 70s talk shows where it was more of a conversation than it had become. I mean, watching it now, I was even thinking like, man, it almost feels like short burst, like podcasts, you know what I mean? Like it feels like the kind of conversations we're used to more now on like long form podcasts than on talk shows. Cause she basically she asks probing questions. She asks loose questions. She allows for tangents. I don't know. There's something kind of refreshing about that,
yeah.
But it can go awry.
Yeah, I was thinking it's a lot like podcasts in that she gets a certain intimacy from her guests that others might not. I mean, like in her interview with Madonna, she's talking about like normal stuff in a way that seems crazy that it's like Madonna that she's talking to, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's talk about Madonna then, because they were obviously friends from A League of Their Own. And Johnny, you suggested talking about the Madonna interview. What stuck out to you about it?
Well, I feel like that was sort of one of the known things about Rosie, especially in the early days of her show, was that she was like best friends with Madonna. And I think, you know, they were in that movie together, which is a pretty beloved film. And I think like their chemistry, like they're playing best friends in the movie, and they're a really like appealing and sort of believable duo.
Yeah.
And the idea that like that dynamic kind of translated over into real life, you were sort of like, oh yeah, of course these two people became friends for real after that, because like you're so rooting for them as friends in that movie and as this kind of like odd couple pair of friends. And I don't know, that particular episode where you've got the Ray of Light era Madonna doing yoga with Rosie, that just feels like such a time capsule to me.
I think they introduced yoga to white women.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like I feel like they're like, this is called Downward Dog. And she's like, Downward Dog! Like, it's just like, it's the first time this audience is hearing any of this.
It's the first time those words were spoken on television. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny, these things that now, like, you know, every Karen in the suburbs knows what Downward Dog is. And it's hilarious to see Madonna be like, here's a little secret from a celebrity that you won't have heard of. Right?
She also brought henna tattoos as well. It was like Madonna just done her Beatles trip to India.
Yeah, it was like she went to England and imported all of these things back to America via steamship. What else? I mean, there are some big ones. Tom Selleck.
Yikes.
On the less happy side of things.
Yeah, not many koosh balls in that interview.
No.
Didn't do yoga.
Maybe one of her most famous interviews. Mm-hmm. How do we describe it? Tom Selleck, the clips that are on YouTube seem to start in the middle of the sort of more confrontational part. So I would love to have seen the full clip where like Tom Selleck comes out and banters about something fun for a few minutes and then it segues into gun control. But it was right after Columbine and Tom Selleck was like an NRA spokesman and Rosie brought up gun control and assault weapons and Tom Selleck wanted to talk about some dumb fucking movies and did not want to talk about that at all. Mm-hmm.
And I think probably that interview is kind of basically the end of his career as an actor.
Mm.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know? You don't count all the made-for-TV movies that he's done since.
I feel like sort of prior to that, you know, obviously he's kind of past his heyday, but he's doing, you know, pretty high-profile recurring character on Friends. Like, he was still kind of in the mix and in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a hard and weird and interesting interview to watch. It's like, it's crazy to see somebody like immediately after Columbine being like pro NRA. Like,
yeah.
And I guess he filmed a commercial for them and like, he kept saying like, I'm not a spokesperson for them. And I think her point was sort of like, well, if you're starring in their commercial, then I think that does describe what you are pretty literally.
He was literally a spokesman for the NRA. And on top of that, he was famous. He was most the thing people knew him from was playing a character whose name was a gun. There's no reason not to talk to Tom Selleck about that.
But he was named after the condoms.
And I don't know. Or the ice cream bar.
Yeah.
I just found like watching her in that moment is really fascinating. And I think you see her wrestling between the two kind of modes that she has. Like you see kind of a glimpse of the like super opinionated, like doesn't take shit from any Rosie that came out later on The View with her trying to still be this balanced, everybody's best friend, Rosie O'Donnell show Rosie. And the reason that she can't just stay in that mode is that because the topic is protecting children. And it's clearly like the most important thing to her, right? I mean, that's just always clearly like kids are such a huge thing for her. She adopted, I think, 5 kids herself, right? She was always involved in, like, children's charities. And I think, like, JM, what you're saying about, like, it feeling sort of like a talk show for kids, I feel like a big part of that is, like, she involved, like, kids and tweens and teens in so many segments.
Oh,
and, like, was just obviously, like, and I mean, I don't know, and then in the more sort of recent revelations that, like, as a child she was sexually assaulted by her father, I feel like you can kind of feel this intense need that she has to, like, help and protect children and try to like give them a positive childhood. And so you've got like right after this horrible tragedy where these children have been like murdered and she's trying so hard to like keep it cute and help a celebrity promote a film, and she just can't. It's like, I don't know. I thought it was interesting, and it made me like really feel for her in that moment.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting. Again, like I joked about her and Madonna introducing yoga to white women, but it's also sort of, it seemed like an interesting point where like the new progressive whatever was starting to sort of like begin. Like that was a sort of like new celebrity sort of awakening, and like the split between left and right, in particular in Hollywood. Because I think before that, before Columbine and before 9/11, like Hollywood was just sort of conservative and everyone just sort of like didn't care about it. Like, yeah, Reagan was president. Most of the actors were probably Republicans, and there wasn't like a sort of like social consciousness like there is today. Like maybe Tim Robbins would march or something with Susan Sarandon.
But well, no, I think there was always an element to that. I mean, look at like Jane Fonda or someone like that.
Yeah, but I mean, like this is where I think it sort of came into like a greater public awareness. It seemed like a very like important moment, you know. And I just remember hearing about it. Like even, I'm not sure that I saw the episode, but I remember hearing about it like on the news. And all, and she like lost. What was the Kmart thing? She was like a spokesperson for Kmart at the time, and
she and Penny Marshall did all those ads together.
Yeah, and it was, I think what happened was she called out Tom Selleck in this interview, and that made headlines. And then she was always, I don't know if feuding's the right word, because I think he was just attacking her, but like she had a thing with Howard Stern. Where he was like always making fun of her or something, and he called out the hypocrisy of her calling out Tom Selleck and you know being pro gun control, and then starring in these spots for Kmart, who at the time was like one of the biggest gun retailers in the country. And to Rosie's credit, like she stopped. From what I remember, I think she stopped doing those Kmart commercials after, you know, that realization. And, you know, I remember, I don't know if you guys listened to her when she was on WTF, but she was talking about like that period, about like Columbine and stuff, and like having that feeling of being like, I'm a celebrity and I have a show that reaches millions and millions of people. Like I can do something to help. And then like, you know, the realization that you ultimately can't, even with, you know, all of this celebrity and attention and, you know, a certain degree of power. And like, that was something that really like fueled her depression, was not being able to do something about these tragedies. So, I mean, it's kind of an important moment for her and the show, I think, this interview. It also makes me like respect her a lot more.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, not a lot of people had the, nobody was calling out celebrities at that point in time, particularly about those sort of issues.
Mm-hmm. And she's, I mean, it's funny because I think even by the standards that we would expect from her later, she's still pretty nice about it. She apologizes to him so many times. She still plugs his fucking movie at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like, he is a lot more, like, surly than her. She's very excited and passionate. Mm-hmm. I think he's sort of a lot more unpleasant than she is.
Yeah, no, he seemed like just uncomfortable and just started, he almost seemed like drunk or something. Like he just started not even wanting, slouching. And it was funny, like he would say things that seemed like, you know, if half the audience were like conservatives or, you know, were on his side, like he would say things that seemed like applause lines and then would just pause, but it was just like deafening silence in the studio.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I should mention, I did go, like, when I was in high school, I went to NBC, like, I went on a school trip to New York, and they, like, signed us up for the NBC tour, and they took us into that studio that had Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, wow.
I had a different show. Wow. I don't think it was Caroline Ray. It was, like, some other talk show, and it was very small. Like, it was way, way smaller than you would think based on the way it was filmed. It was kind of surprising. Let's talk about one more thing, and then we'll go to a quick break. I wanted to talk about this, like, I remembered it as her neighbor, but Johnny, you corrected me, and it was a woman that claimed that she knew more about Mary Tyler Moore and the
yes,
Mary Tyler Moore
Davina.
Show.
Davina.
Yeah, Davina. And so they had her on to do a trivia contest about Mary Tyler Moore, and then they like disputed it in the People's Court.
Right. With Mayor Ed Koch.
Right. Yeah. So weird.
Remember when like former New York mayors just went on celebrity talk shows and court TV shows instead of trying to, you know, treason?
Yeah.
Different times. Yeah. That was it was a whole running bit where they would show video. It was the idea seemed to be that this woman Davina was just sending this series of taunting videos to Rosie, being like, "Oh, like she would say some obscure piece of information about like Mary Tyler Moore or Rhoda and be like, "Bet you didn't know that, Rosie. Like, bet you forgot about that one." Like implying that she was this sort of 70s trivia master.
Right.
And it was this whole, I think it might have even been like a 3-episode stunt. Because there were, I believe it was like there was like part one where they played some kind of trivia game styled after one game show. And it was like a tie. So they had a tiebreaker episode where it was like, I feel like they were doing, I can't even remember, but it was like they did their version of Jeopardy or their version of The Price is Right. But it was all about
right.
Yeah,
trivia.
I saw that clip. Yeah. They played a whole round. It's
and
very,
then,
very close.
Then the cast of Rent came out and sang a song, like, sang a song about it. And
of course
then
they
did. And then they settled it all in the People's Court.
Right.
And then the controversy at the time was that it came out that Davina was an actor.
Yeah.
Which, of course she was. Like,
and I think my recollection is, like, she was on a thing. Because I think I also saw her, like, in a show and was like, that's weird. That's, like, the woman who was doing trivia on the Rosie show. And so I think other people saw that to the point where she had to address it on the show and be like, yes, this woman is like a working actor, but that's just a coincidence. Like, it wasn't staged. Like, that just happens to be her job. And it's like, I don't know what to believe now.
All right, now, ladies, hands on the buzzers, because I am ready to bring it on.
All
bring
right,
it on.
Okay, let's go. Bring it on.
Round of questions
yes.
are each worth 100 points.
100 for me.
Now, the first to buzz in gets to answer.
Okay.
If you get it wrong,
yes.
your opponent gets a chance to answer.
Will never happen, Mary.
All right.
Ooh. It's okay, Davina. It's all right.
Don't fight, ladies.
Oh, please. Sorry, Mary. Just excited.
It's hard to know what to believe. Yeah, I mean, I looked up her IMDb, and she's been in tons of stuff. Also, just like, I don't really think someone who wasn't an actor would have been able to, you know, carry 3 episodes
yeah.
of the show right. as Rosie's
she was
foil.
So charismatic.
Like, it was a real job that she had to do. As to whether, like, she did genuinely just start sending the videos to Rosie, or if it was something just totally invented whole cloth by the producers, I don't know. Maybe she was someone who was friends with Rosie, or, I mean, it does seem like if some crank just started sending in videos of themselves to the show, would they put a random person on the air in that context? Maybe not. I don't know. It was good TV, so who cares, is my take.
Yeah, totally. I don't even know what to believe about that. Maybe someday we'll find out. We're going to take a short break. We've got trivia when we come back and much more to talk about in terms of the Rosie O'Donnell show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back on Rewatchability. We're talking about the Rosie O'Donnell Show with Johnny Walker.
It's the Rosie O'Donnell Show.
She had a great theme song.
Oh, awesome.
It was good.
Very swinging.
And also I like the having an audience member introduce the show.
I also really like that. There was a really nice one for this random episode I watched where it was this couple who got married at a Dunkin' Donuts.
Aww.
And then the whole everyone in the audience had donuts under their seat and they all ate the donuts. It was nice. It was very common people. Those were people
she
weren't
did.
Actors.
You know, all of those gimmicks and stunts and, we said game show games, those have become the standard for late night talk shows. Think about all the Jimmy Fallon lip sync things or, carpool karaoke. I don't think the people did that so much back at the time. I think that was something she pioneered. No,
it might be.
I think
one thing I noticed, though, is that, Rosie's sort of a sore loser. There's this, when she has J.K. Rowling on, there's this kid who does Harry Potter trivia. And this kid fucking aces the Harry Potter trivia. She mixes up Ravenclaw and calls it Ravencliff. And she sort of just steamrolls right past it and pretends that it was a tie. Mm-hmm. And then, J.K. Rowling, I think, has to be no, Rosie. But also, whenever it comes out to giving out prizes, I mean, when they give away things on TV shows, it's all promotional items or whatever. And, it's a quiz or something. The person will get it wrong and Rosie will be okay, well, you didn't get it. And then the guest, Madonna, or whoever, will be give them the fucking CD player, Rosie.
No, we're just going to take it in the back and burn them. No one won.
She wants you to follow the rules.
Well, let's do a quick trivia round. Then we'll talk about some more highlights from the show. Which Christmas toy craze was enabled, perhaps even created, by the toy's appearance on the Rosie O'Donnell
Boop,
show?
Boop.
Tickle Me Elmo.
That's right, Tickle Me Elmo.
I buzzed in.
Is that what that was?
We've never done that before, so that's okay.
No,
I thought that was just some light Foley work from you.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say Tickle Me Elmo as well.
It was the Tickle Me Elmo. They sent one, the toy company, Tyco, sent one to Rosie O'Donnell for her son and 200 for, the rest of the staff. And they had, they started doing a You Bet Your Life kind of thing, where if guests said the secret word, they'd get a Tickle Me Elmo.
And if they did not, unless Madonna happened to intercede on their behalf. Yeah.
And that kind of helped perpetuate that. Yeah, if people weren't around or don't remember, that was a huge thing, the Tickle Me Elmo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you couldn't get them, right? People were spending thousands of dollars on eBay to get them for their kids.
Yeah, and there were bootleg ones, and it was a whole thing. And this is, before, third-party vendors on the internet or something. You would have to, if you wanted to buy one for $1,000, you'd have to go meet a guy in the alley or something.
Yeah.
It would probably
was it before or after the Rosie O'Doll?
Right, yeah, that's another thing you mentioned. I didn't remember that. Yeah, there was a doll kind of shaped like the cartoon from the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Did people buy that?
It was for charity, right?
Because
on her birthday episode, she asked everybody for her birthday to buy one of those dolls, and it went to charity. Because it would be weird if it didn't go to charity.
It all goes to Barbara Streisand.
I didn't remember that doll being kind of a big deal. I kind of wanted one.
Right. Sure.
Which is, that's a weird thing to have, but I was into it. I liked her.
Okay, question number two. This one, it gets a little tougher here. Which celebrity was banned from the show?
Ooh.
Ooh.
There are apparently a few, but one she is named.
Did Bobcat Goldthwait light her chair on fire too?
No.
I don't know. The idea of someone being turned away from the Rosie O'Donnell show seems anathema to its spirit. I can't imagine.
Yeah. Well, it was Leif Garrett.
What?
Who was a singer and an actor, right? He was on the show, I think, promoting a documentary about him. And
his tragic life, right?
Yeah, it was about like his tragic life and all his drug use. And apparently, even though they talk about that in the interview, he was still using drugs at the time. And Rosie said like he burned himself in the green room by smoking crack in there, which he denies. But apparently he was on the banned list. She didn't confirm that he was officially banned, but Rosie also had a not great story about Bill Cosby.
Ooh.
Yeah, making a lewd gesture of sorts to a producer. Yeah.
Enough said.
Well,
okay, this last question is not so much about the show itself, but about Rosie O'Donnell. And I was reminded, did you guys watch the David Bowie interview?
No.
Yes, yeah, I did.
That was good. They were friends, apparently. They were talking about getting together over Christmas and stuff.
We were going to do a record together. Ziggy meets Rosie.
Well, I feel like that's part of her whole, America's best friend vibe, is that often she would have these huge celebrity guests that she just did seem to legitimately, that David Bowie's like, why couldn't you come for Christmas dinner? And she's... And, Iman comes out and she's, imitating Iman's voice, which sounds like it would be so cringeworthy. But I found in the context of the interview, I was like, she can get away with this because you can tell that they're actually friends.
Yeah.
And this is her, teasing her friends.
Well, she also kept saying, or she told David Bowie that she always wanted him to play China Girl, which was her favorite song. It's no, Rosie, that's the most racist song of all of the Bowie songs. And then he changed the lyrics to Rosie Girl and sang it to her.
Mm-hmm.
But
I watched a subsequent appearance that he did on the show, and he did perform China Girl in full.
Oh, no.
On a later episode because she wanted it so much.
Wow. That's kind of he seemed... They seem to genuinely get along. That's sweet.
Well, that's nice.
But so the reason why they're friends, as they say in the interview, is she befriended Iman because they were in a movie together. That movie was Exit to Eden. Do you remember the BDSM movie with Rosie O'Donnell and Dan Aykroyd?
Oh, I remember that VHS cover very well. I never rented it, but I would always walk by it and be like, what on earth is this?
I think we should...
And she would bring it up on the show lot, instead of shame and horror.
I think we should do it on the podcast at some point
next week.
Rosie month.
I'm absolutely down to pop that particular cherry with you.
Well,
boys.
If people tweet at us and say they want us to actually do it, we'll do it. So my question is: who wrote the novel that Exit to Eden was based on? It was a real, erotic novel that was then transformed into a buddy cop movie starring Dan Aykroyd and Rosie O'Donnell. So who wrote the original novel?
I'm just going to say the Marquis de Sade. I don't know.
Is it like a Danielle Steele or a Jackie Collins or something?
Close. It was Anne Rice.
What?
She wrote it under the pen name Anne Rampling, because it wasn't about vampires, I guess.
Yeah, but it did suck. I assume.
Yeah, so I just thought that was weird.
Wow, I want to see it so much right now.
Yes, no, I will see if it's streaming as soon as this episode's done. Okay, Rob mentioned it earlier, but one thing we wanted to talk about was Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling. And, Rosie was definitely, it was popular already, but she was an early adopter of Harry Potter. I don't think, personally, I'd heard of Harry Potter until she started talking about it on the show and had J.K. Rowling on as a guest.
I think so, too. I think that's where I heard about Harry Potter as well for the first time, when it was in books.
I had actually heard of Harry Potter before because my godmother was really into sort of British fantasy and children's literature and had some kind of connection and had ordered the books for me from England.
Oh, wow.
But it was at a point where I don't think that they were available, or maybe just not widely available in North America. And yeah, I think, and I remember like reading those books and people being like, what is that? What's this weird kid's book that you're reading that they'd never heard of it? So I think Rosie was really the person who brought, like, I think the phenomenon had begun in the UK, but she's really the person who brought it to North America.
It's so weird in the episode where she has J.K. Rowling. They're talking about all the characters, but she doesn't know how to pronounce any of their names. Like Hermione, it's like Herman One. Some kid writes in and calls Ginny Ginny, I think. And yeah. It's like, it's so funny.
Well, she also, like, when she introduces her, she says, like, it's the author of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Abascan or something. Like, she totally...
Yeah, she says the title wrong multiple times.
Which is fine. I mean, like that.
It's endearing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah.
Like, yeah, if you hadn't said it out loud before, but it's just funny that... that she said it so many times to the person who wrote it.
She just has that great sort of like American confidence where like not being that informed is no barrier to discussing something.
Right. it was also like, yeah, J.K. Rowling seemed super uncomfortable throughout the whole interview, in that first interview. Like she didn't seem... It's kind of weird to think the books even caught on because that interview did not make me want to read those books. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was funny that like J.K. Rowling was talking about how like, you know, she only adopted the name J.K. because her publisher insisted on it because they thought it would like alienate young boys if they knew it was written by a woman, which is common knowledge. But and then she said like that her friends made fun of her and called her Jake. It's like, oh, so you're uncomfortable that you're being misgendered by people. That's interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, obfuscating your gender is only permissible if it's for personal financial gain, if you're J.K. Rowling. Like, that's... I love that just, I mean, her old turfy nonsense is just so hilarious where it's like, this is somebody who multiple times, like, both through her, like, through the JK and then through, like, publishing those other books under a pseudonym that's male, that she's like, what? Somebody using, like, a gendered name that they weren't given at birth? It must be a swindle. And I should know, because it's a swindle I've done myself time and time again. She's like, someone's up to something, because I'm always up to something when I'm lying about my gender, and you're lying about yours to pull something over on me. I think that that's her perspective.
Do you think her whole, like, transphobic agenda is just about her concerns about, like, competition in the publishing sphere?
She's like, oh, coming for my gig, huh? I don't know. I think it's that tied with some whole sort of like moaning Myrtle paranoia about toilets that I don't fully understand that I think she needs to see a therapist about.
That's the thing that was so weird is like in that essay she wrote, she was like saying worried about trans people using the women's bathroom. It's like you wrote an entire book about like two 13-year-old boys hanging out in the girls' bathroom, and we were all supposed to think that was fun.
Is that what happens in Harry Potter?
I was not planning on reading this, but I did check the other day because I kept thinking about the weirdness of the character Moaning Myrtle in connection to her extreme trans bathroom paranoia. And this is what Moaning Myrtle says when she explains what happened to her. Anyway, what really got me was that it was a boy speaking, so I unlocked the door to tell him to go and use his own toilet, and then I died. And I think that just really tells you everything you need to know about J.K. Rowling.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
What a maniac. And what a weird monster for Rosie O'Donnell to be so responsible for. And in a similar way, and I mean, I don't know if the figures bear this out, but I always got the impression that she was also pretty instrumental in the explosion of Amazon in a pretty related way. Like, she talked about Amazon all the time, and she talked about it in connection to those books because she was like, I love these kids' books. They're in England. I can't get them. I found this cool website where you can get all these books. Everyone should go look at this website. And now look at the world Rosie O'Donnell has left
us. Is it possible that she was just paid ridiculous amounts of money to promote Amazon?
Probably. I mean, we were. Earlier this Christmas, I was, I took such painstaking lengths to avoid Amazon and buy all of our gifts at local, stores that I wanted to support. And then I checked on one of our podcasts. So I was like, oh, I'll just make sure this all sounds okay. And I started playing, and the first thing that played was an Amazon ad.
Womp womp.
She also had the actors on, the kid actors. Did you guys see that clip?
No.
She had the little kids when the movie was coming out. It was cute.
No.
And she talked about this in another J.K. Rowling interview, too, about how, like, she called Chris Columbus and asked to be in the movie because she wanted to play, like you said, Johnny, she wanted to play Mrs. Weasley. And apparently she called Chris Columbus up and was like, I'll do it for free. And Chris Columbus was like, no, sorry, we're only doing British actors. And she seemed pretty mad about it because she continually brought it up to the actors and writer of the film. And she was like, she was talking to J.K. Rowling about it and saying how like pissed off she was. And J.K. Rowling was like, can you do a London accent? She was like, yeah, sure. Like my dad's from Ireland. Of course I can do a London accent. Hello, Governor. And J.K. Rowling was like, no, that is Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. Like, that's awful. And it wasn't brought up again.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have cast her in a role that required her to do an accent. I think they could have given her, like, a little cameo.
I think so, too. I was thinking the same thing. You know who I thought of in that first movie? What about the broomstick teacher woman? That could have...
Madam Hooch?
Sure.
That went to classic British character actor Zoe Wanamaker.
I'd give it to Rosie. I don't even think she was in any of the other movies. Like, there could have been one American there. I've been to England. I've met Americans in England. It's not all, one thing. I don't know. I agree
but
with you.
They could have
been
Hogwarts?
Something.
I think somewhere in that entire franchise, there could have been a scene where, Harry flies his broomstick overhead and, cut to Rosie O'Donnell on the street being like, oh my God, like that.
Firing a koosh ball at
that
him.
That would have been nice.
Maybe they could have. But, it is also kind of like galling for Rosie O'Donnell to be like, I should have this role in this thing that I have nothing to do with, really. She did promote it. I'm sure that, she promotes lots of things. And it's sort of like, that sort of brings up one thing that I found, maybe just watching a lot of these clips out of context, is that, the Rosie O'Donnell show is all about entertaining Rosie O'Donnell and all of her, interests and needs and wants and her moods. And, the audience is sort of secondary. It's not that she doesn't invite them in, because she does. She's really good at reaching out and bringing them in. But as a prerequisite, you have to sort of be interested in what Rosie's interested in. You just have to take that as the theme of the show. She's not necessarily doing it for the audience. She's doing it for herself, and it's enjoyable for us, I think. What do you guys think?
But I think that makes sense. I think any talk show, the best, interactions you get are when the host is genuinely invested in the guests and not just, going through the motions to promote something. So, I love that's what made the show work.
I think my counterpoint would be that, up to this point and even well beyond, the vast majority of these styles of talk shows are exclusively hosted by straight white men. And I think pretty, infused with their perspective and their interests. And I always felt pretty unincluded in those. Like, I really disliked most late night talk shows growing up. Like, watching, like, Letterman and Leno, I was just like, I don't see anything in this that is, like, my interests or my point of view or, like, relatable. So I don't know. I found it like a refreshing change of pace from the boys club of late night talk shows that still exists.
Well, sure. I mean, absolutely. She's like, you know, coming from a different perspective and all that. But I do mean, like, you know, she's not like servicing like the stuff that's being promoted necessarily. And, you know, like, that's what works. But it is sort of like about her. Like, if a male talk show host had like a crush on like a female guest the way that Rosie had on Tom Cruise, I mean, that would be like a notable thing. I mean, all male talk show hosts hit on all of their female guests. Like, any time Conan sits down with any woman at all, it's always super awkward. But like, there's not like there's not like that level of like obsession about like her like pet themes or her pet topics or like,
well,
you know,
but I think to Johnny's point and in response to your point, I think like the fact that it has been that kind of boys club for decades and decades, like, created such a space that she could fill it with more of her own like personal stuff or her own like interests. I don't know. Like, I think you're totally right. And I think it's totally crazy that I wasn't even thinking about it, but like the entertainment industry didn't learn a lesson from the Rosie O'Donnell show, which was certainly one of the most beloved and popular talk shows of our lifetime. Like, the fact that, like, you know, 20 years later, the talk show, you know, the kind of mainstream Hollywood talk show circuit is still populated by straight white men, like you said, I think at least 3/4 of which are named Jimmy. The fact that, like, that we still haven't, like, made room for another female host doing the same thing is kind of crazy, like, given like how much of a phenomenon this show was. Like we said, it spurred other phenomenons, like there like the Tickle Me Elmo, the Harry Potter, Amazon. Like, this show was a pop culture juggernaut. So yeah, why are they not creating space for you know, for voices like Rosie today? Like, even like, for, you know, again, to what you were saying, Rob, like, it was so, in a way, it was idiosyncratic because she's such a character. But like, it was that idiosyncrasy.
Hermione.
But it was her, you know, specific likes and dislikes that is what engaged so many people. Because, like, I mean, the show probably at its inception was like designed for, like, you know, stay-at-home moms or like middle-aged women, but like we said, it, you know, it reached us as, like, you know, 13-year-old boys or however old we were. So I think there is something when you have a character who's like, or a person who's like engaging and funny, and even if, like, especially when it's, you know, things they're passionate about or things that they're driving from their own like passions, I think that makes it like so much more engaging, so easier to latch on to.
I think she changed the game in a number of ways, you know. Yeah, I mean, I think you see the kind of like more like gamey kind of things you see on late night now, I think, is like coming out of her influence in a way, even though to me it's taking it in a much more sort of like special little boy camp counselor way with like James Corden and Jimmy Fallon that I don't find as appealing personally. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think her impact on Oprah is really interesting too, where like previous to the Rosie O'Donnell show, a lot of daytime talk show was trash TV. And I think a lot of people forget too, that in the earlier years of Oprah's show, It was a bit more in that direction. It was a bit more like sensational interviews and sort of the like lurid human interest stories. And I think post Rosie, it became more celeb interviews, favorite things, like that kind of stuff. And I think the shows really influenced each other, and there was a lot of back and forth. And then, I mean, they tried to pass the show on to Carolyn Ray, which obviously didn't have
the magic.
But then, no, but I mean, the true successor of Rosie is definitely for sure Ellen.
Well, let's talk
right
about
down
that
to being an afternoon lesbian.
Let's talk about the Ellen interview, which we also watched, which came on the heels of like her character coming out. I can't remember like the chronology of Ellen.
I think it was on the foot of her character coming out. Like she hadn't done it yet, but right, there were rumors that it was going to happen that season. So mm-hmm, this was sort of like almost like setting it up.
Was Ellen out and then there were rumors that her character was going to come out?
Her character definitely came out first.
Really? No, that doesn't sound right. Then why would people...
When was the Yep, I'm Gay
right
cover? That's the question, right? Like, that was her big public.
I remember on SNL, the Norm MacDonald Weekend Update had that cover and said, Ellen announced, Yep, I'm Gay. It's like, and in a follow-up cover story, Richard Simmons announced, Yep, I'm Very, Very Gay. It was just like the exact same cover with Richard Simmons. So she comes on. It's hard to watch because, like, I did hear some people saying, like, in the wake of, like, the allegations about how Ellen treats her staff and stuff, like, I did see some people saying, like, as a counterpoint, like, Rosie could be tough, but she was very good to her staff. And, like, you know, one of the big things she did, which we haven't talked about yet, was she had such a predominantly female staff, so she built a daycare in her offices, mm-hmm, so that her staff and guests and whoever needed it could have free daycare, which is amazing. And
that's incredible.
Yeah. And like people talked about it, like I can't remember which episode it was. It was Mr. Rogers. I watched Mr. Rogers and he was talking about it. And so like there's something, something, even though, like you said, like she paved the way for Ellen, in light of all we've learned about Ellen, like in a lot of ways, they seem kind of antithetical to each other. But so they have this interview where it's, you know, there's the rumors that her character on the sitcom is going to come out. And I guess I didn't think much about it when I was watching it, but like, reading up about it afterwards, I guess it was like Rosie was perhaps not concerned, but like she was trying to thread that needle of how do I talk about Ellen's sexuality, Ellen's gayness coming out on TV, and you know, how do I relate to that without outright, you know, lying about about myself. And they kind of do this bit where Ellen says, yes, it's going to be revealed that my character is Lebanese. And Rosie says something to the effect of like, I'm Lebanese too. And Ellen's like, I always kind of thought you were. So it was kind of this just like winking thing where they were able to talk about it through this kind of filter of comedy, which was kind of funny. What'd you guys think of that?
I thought that was great. I thought it was really cool. And I mean, it's Rosie performing this like character bit, right? Like it, more than it is like a genuine interview. It's like, it's a comedy routine, and it allows her to occupy this very complicated sort of glass closet space where she's sort of like, okay, so there's people in the know I'm a lesbian. There's a lot of people who don't. And I'm going to do this kind of dog whistle where it's like, here's a friendly wink to my friends who know how weird it is to be like, we're these two lesbian stand-up comedians, like from a similar time, talking about how one of them is going to come out on TV and the other one is clearly not, but like participating in it and not being totally hypocritical. It's interesting too, because I remember it never occurred to me as a kid watching the show that Rosie might be gay. Even though the Tom Cruise crush had a bit of a red flag for me, I was like, I don't quite know what this woman's deal is, but I didn't necessarily clock that, even though, I mean, you know, you see her performance in A League of Their Own, and how could you possibly not assume that that's a lesbian?
Right.
But for, I think also there was her band leader, John McDee, yeah, of the McDee.
John McDaniel.
Yeah, was so clearly gay, which they also never discussed. Right. But again, it was this kind of like, you couldn't. It's just singing out of him. It's so obvious.
Well, that was what was weird about reading that article about, like, the making of the show. And he was talking about, like, because, you know, he wasn't, like, a TV guy. So he was saying, like, suddenly I was in the space where I was, like, chatting with a friend, but I wasn't able to, like, reference my partner. And he was like, and that was really weird. And there was also this additional weirdness of, like, it was clearly the gayest show on TV. Like, it was like, yeah, like, oh, you said, yeah, they brought in Broadway performers, like, if there was like a moment of silence, like that, it was, you know, it was so much, you know, lavish, extravagant, you know, they devoted an hour to Barbara Streisand. I mean, like, but the mm-hmm. fact that they couldn't even have like the band leader who is on every episode, like, mention their partner, is just this insane level of like, yeah, like, cognitive dissonance that had to exist in 90s television. It's strange. Yeah.
Well, it was all kind of don't ask, don't
yeah,
tell,
right? Yeah.
I feel like that's the
flavor of the season,
world, yeah, they were living in.
I do. There's a few things I want to hit up quickly before we wrap up. Star Wars was also coming out around that time. So she had a lot of Star Wars people on. George Lucas was on. That was weird. Natalie Portman, Liam Neeson came on to promote The Phantom Menace and kind of spoiled the ending because Rosie was like, so are you going to be in the next one, number two? And he was just like, because his character gets killed and then she felt bad. And speaking of spoiling endings, Rosie O'Donnell, did you guys read about this, that she spoiled the ending to Fight Club? Yeah,
right,
like, not accidentally, yeah, like, she saw, like, a preview screening of it, hated it, like, really just didn't like it and thought it was, like, a bad movie, like, a morally mm-hmm. reprehensible movie, and, like, went out and told people not to see it and gave away the ending to help convince people not to go see it.
Wow.
And, like, they were fucking pissed. Like, they talk about that in, like, the DVD commentary for the movie.
That's so wild.
What else did I want to talk about? Oh, quickly. Yeah, I did watch the Mr. Rogers episode. That was really great. You should watch that if you haven't. There was a weird thing she had with Christopher Walken.
Right.
Where she just talked about, like, how he creeped her out and she thought he was scary. And
I mean, fair.
Yeah. But it's also, like, I don't know. Like, it's funny. But it was also, like, pre, you know, like, internet or YouTube, so that, like, I mean, now, like, you would just Google Christopher Walken and find out he was, like, a song and dance guy.
Yeah,
like,
they have so much in common.
I know, like, if she watched that scene from Pennies from Heaven, like, she wouldn't be scared of him.
But my memory is that when she had him on, she showed that scene from Pennies
from
Heaven.
Oh, did she? I don't remember that.
Because I remember seeing that clip on the Rosie O'Donnell show and being like, whoa, like, this is a side of Christopher Walken I never expected.
Well, the only thing I remember from him coming on was, like, she talked about how scary she thought he was, and then they brought him on, and she was talking about, like, how apprehensive she was, and she wasn't sure she wanted to do it, and then he came out carrying this mysterious black box with, like, a skull and crossbones on it, and she was, like, seriously looked like she was, like, freaking out. And then he slowly walked over to her and opened it up and pulled out, like, a bouquet of roses and handed it to her. And the rest of the interview was normal, but...
I have a memory about her, like, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like there was an episode where she had Harvey Keitel on and then was talking about a movie in which he had a nude scene. Of which there's several candidates.
Bad Lieutenant, the piano. I mean,
yeah, I think probably the piano, and that she was like, "I saw your penis."
I mean, to be fair,
which is always—it's always a thing you can say to Harvey Keitel the next time you run into him. I don't know. Like, I guess it's like you did, Rosie O'Donnell.
I also, the other thing I remembered, and I remembered this being an awkward thing, and then I went back and rewatched it, and it wasn't really awkward at all. It was she had the cast of Out of Sight on, so. George Clooney came out and Jennifer Lopez came out, but she had, like, I don't remember why, I didn't see the beginning of it, but like she had a giant cabinet with heat lamps full of White Castle burgers. I think, do you remember that?
Yes. It was like a whole wall. Like the whole back wall of the set was just White Castle.
It was
Castle
like the
burgers.
Wardrobe that borders Narnia, but full of burgers. And
she ate so many of them during the episode.
She had like a burger eating contest with George Clooney. And it was like, and I remember like being a 13-year-old kid and like loving eating burgers and still being kind of grossed out by how many burgers were being eaten. And so she keeps giving them people burgers. And then Ving Rhames comes out and she says like, "Here, have a burger." And he very seriously said, "I don't partake in the consumption of animal flesh." And like, wow. Yeah. And then I don't remember it being like this awkward thing. And I watched it again and he says that, and like the audience reacts very seriously. Like people like gasped. People were like, and one woman clapped and he was like, "Thank you." But then Rosie went, so okay, I got something else. And she got a bun that was just like a burger bun with bean sprouts in it. She's like, "Here, have this." And then he was like, "Oh, okay." And it was like totally fine and funny. And he was just, you know, he was being colorful and trying to be kind of cute. And he was great. He was a great guest in general. They had a lot of great banter. It wasn't at all like the awkward thing I remembered from when I was a kid.
She loved giving people junk food.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. Like, she was always sneaking her guests, like, ho-hos and stuff.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was the electronic footstool that would come out. You said there was something about
yes.
Shatner in that?
Yeah. So she had the footstool because I guess those chairs were kind of high and some of her guests who were shorter needed the stool, and she press a button on her desk and it would shoot out. But there was this situation where she had William Shatner on and she wanted to show it to him, and for some reason, and it's like it had never happened before, but like the footstool, when it came out, like brought the whole chair forward, so it kind of like shoved him forward, and then he took like a huge pratfall like onto the floor and did like a quite belabored bit about how like Rosie had tried to kill him and he was gonna sue her and stuff, and it became this kind of like running bit, and I remember him being on in a subsequent episode and then like showing the clip again in slow motion. And then trying it again, and I think, like, the second time, like, something else went wrong that also made him fall down.
Just him being, like, 80, probably?
It was, like, definitely, like, he was hamming it up a lot and turning this minor technical malfunction into a lengthy bit.
Hamming it up? That's not the William Shatner I know. that's great. I did want to mention, did you watch the Dolly Parton interview that's online?
No, what happened in that one?
Oh, it was great. It began with Dolly Parton talking about how like her, I think it was her nieces who were like 10 years old, were big fans of Rosie and she wants to say hi. And she was like, "Oh yeah, I'm really big with kids." It's like, "Oh yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's great to be popular with kids." And then at the tail end of the interview, Rosie just said, like, how do you like New York? She's like, oh, what's better now? She's like, what do you mean now? It's like, oh, I don't know. Do we have time for this story? And she's like, sure. So she's like, oh, well, when I was like a teenager, I came here with one of my best friends. And, you know, we just wanted to go see a porno movie. So we went down to the theater. We watched a porno movie. And then it was really dirty. We didn't like it, so we got out of there. But we didn't realize that we were dressed like whores. So we
sounds like a Norm MacDonald routine.
And then and you could tell it was just like, and I, watching it is so funny because like you were just talking about how much like your 10-year-old nieces love this show, and so she's like, yeah, we're dressed like whores. So then you know this guy comes up and. Yeah, now I'm just doing Norm MacDonald. But she's like, oh, this guy comes up and, you know, tries to, like, you know, procure our services. And we don't know what he's talking about. And he's saying, you know, come back to my place. How much do you charge? And I'm like, get away from me. And then she says, and, you know, this was back in the day where, you know, a young girl, if you're going to the city, like, we brought our guns with us. So... And Rose like, okay, all right. She's like, so, you know, this guy wouldn't leave us alone. So I had to say to him, like, you know, like, I've got a gun. Like, you don't want me to, how do you say, like, turn a chicken into a hen, right?
Wow.
The interview started off with, like, how much children enjoy watching the show. And then it devolved into her being like, I went to a porno theater and then people mistook me for a sex worker. So I threatened to shoot him in the balls. Wow. And, it was kind of amazing. It was a great like talk show anecdote, but it was surprisingly off color for daytime TV.
She should have wrote a song about that. I mean, there could be good. Put a tune to that.
I mean, she probably.
Yeah,
did.
That's what 9 to 5 is about.
That's how long she was serving for shooting a guy in the dick. I guess 5 to 9.
Oh, and then she said they went back to their hotel room and, like, they wouldn't let her in into the room because they thought she was turning tricks. And she told this whole long story about, you know, full of all these amazing details. And then it was like, hey, you know, but now I have an apartment here and it's great. I love it.
Wow.
Let's.
That is a not ready for the afternoon story.
It was, yeah, I was not ready for it at 8 o'clock at night on YouTube 20 years later. let's quickly talk about the post Rosie show career of Rosie O'Donnell, because the show only went for 6 years, which is kind of, you know, a short amount of time for a talk show.
Well, she ended it. She went out on top.
Yeah, she just, you know, she walked away.
Who can do that? Can Conan do that? No.
No. He's going to cling to. Well, I think he did end his show, didn't he? But he's going to, you know, he's going to try to find some way to be on TV. But she left. She went. So did she immediately go to The View? What happened there?
No, I think there was a gap for a while. Because she cut off all her hair and she published her first memoir, which was like kind of scandalous. People were. And she came out after the show ended, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading. I don't think she came out. I think she was kind of outed. Like, I was reading one thing that said one of the things that contributed to her being outed was Roseanne.
Right.
Like, in the early 2000s, Roseanne started her own talk show, which was bad and short-lived. But during, like, a press conference, they said, well, your name is Roseanne, and there's Rosie O'Donnell. How will people tell your show from hers? And she said, oh, I'm the straight one. And, you know, ruffled some feathers and, you know, kind of created this, like, gossip. And it was really dumb. I remember watching Rosie show up on Conan. And, like, who clearly, like, was friends with her and knew her. And at this point, like, she was out. And Conan kind of just read the, like, pre-written question, like, oh, so, like, are you confirming that you're gay? Like, this is a big deal, or, you know, something to that effect. And she was like, it's not a big deal. Like, she's like, you know, I didn't talk about it in the show, but, like, everyone who knows me knows it. Like, you know me. Was it a surprise to you? And he was just like, the veneer of TV just fell. And he was like... No, I knew. So it was just, yeah, it was this kind of like, yeah, it there was kind of, yeah, the sense that it was a big kind of Hollywood gossip story in the tabloids and in the Entertainment Tonight's. But when it boiled down to it, everyone was kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it's, no one seemed shocked by it, really.
I really remember at the time it being paired, though, with kind of like severe Butch Dyke haircut that she was sort of forced to apologize for after.
Oh, really?
People were really upset that, yeah, she had given herself this, like, gay haircut that they didn't agree to. And I remember her later having to be, like, sort of making jokes about it and just being like, oh, you've never had a bad haircut? Like, sorry, guys. Like, made a mistake, got a bad haircut. And then when she showed up again a few years later on The View, she'd, like, her hair was kind of longer and more like it had been on her own show. And I always felt it was kind of, it's just like, you don't own this woman's hair. Yeah. Just because you watch the Rosie O'Donnell show, she can have whatever fucking haircut she wants. I thought it was, like, insane that she had to, like, apologize for having a haircut that was, like, too queer for middle America. But I do believe that she did have to apologize to, like, be able to get back on daytime TV. And she did.
She also had that variety show that you sent us a clip from it.
Yes.
Where she was, like, dancing with, like, food products with Gloria Estefan.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That variety special. So I think that's, like, post her, because her time on The View, I mean, she brought in huge ratings for them. But a lot of shit went down. There was, like, her notorious showdown with Elizabeth Hasselbeck, where there, you know, this tiny blonde Christian woman is just screaming Republican talking points at her until she had to step away. And then there were, like, all of these, I remember, like, attempted comebacks. Like, she had a different show on the Oprah Winfrey Network that was something called, like, the Rosie Show, and it was essentially just the Rosie O'Donnell Show again. Like, it was an afternoon talk show with celebrities and stuff, but it didn't run for very long, and it didn't really work for some reason. They didn't really recapture the magic. And then there was Rosie Live, which was like a Thanksgiving special, but the idea was that if it was a big hit, they were going to bring it back as a regular show, and it would be this sort of, like, tester pilot for it. And it was not a big hit. It was a humongous fiasco. It was, like, critically loathed. It got terrible ratings. It's got Clay Aiken and Alanis Morissette and Liza Minnelli.
Good lineup.
Real curious lineup of people.
Rob and I have seen Liza Minnelli in concert together.
That's
right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put that out there.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm so jealous.
You were saying something about about not being masculine enough earlier, Rob. Rosie O'Donnell show.
Well, if she had Liza on more episodes, I would have watched.
But, I mean, she had Liza on enough episodes. Okay, that's fair. But the big finale, which is so beautifully excruciating, like, I've watched this clip so many times, and she's got Gloria, who Gloria Estefan was, like, on Rosie O'Donnell's show.
She guest hosted,
right? They were friends, they were neighbors, and back when she had released, like, the Rosie O Christmas album, and it had all these Christmas duets, there was this song called, like, "I'm Gonna Eat for Christmas." So they decided to redo it for the Thanksgiving special. And the Thanksgiving special, I guess, was aired the day before Thanksgiving. So they changed it to "I'm Gonna Eat Tomorrow," which is just also, it's like, it's a weird phrase to keep singing over and over again. And the intro to it is, you see, like, the two women they're trying to do this comedy bit, but, like, Gloria Estefan just kills the jokes. Like, she stutters, she explains them, she says them wrong. Rosie tries to cut the second joke, and Gloria Estefan continues to tell it over the intro that the band is already playing for the song. All of these dancing children dressed as food come and start dancing around as they just sing about how they're going to eat so much and gorge themselves, like, on these children, apparently. And then for the big climax, Rachel Ray appears with a giant, like, papier-mâché turkey. It's just so, it's so weird and beautiful. And, of course you couldn't make that into a TV show. It succeeds on no intentional level of art, but is a masterpiece of just unintentional.
It was a waking nightmare.
That's
well, it's also like there's something about Rosie that like she's not a good singer, but you like seeing her sing and perform and do these things on her talk show because she's like the audience surrogate, like, but but when you put her on a stage with dancers and things, it doesn't work the same.
Yeah,
she has a duet with Celine Dion that I recommend checking out. They do. Do you hear what I hear? It's a wonderful vocal contrast.
All right, I think that's as good a place as any to start wrapping up. Rob, did you think of what you saw that the Rosie O'Donnell show was rewatchable?
I would say probably. I mean, it's a really innovative show in a lot of ways. Like, it was something that wasn't being done in the daytime. She was definitely, you know, the only woman doing the late night talk show format, though, again, in the daytime. And she is really funny. I mean, she is a great comedian. She has, you know, a great style. I love, like, her sort of, like, voices, her, like, little characters. I do find her personality, like, a little bit much. And again, maybe it's just because we watch these, like, specific clips, which are sometimes where she is, like, you know, at her most emotional or her most needy, maybe. Yeah, I think it's rewatchable. I mean, we don't have a world where you can just, like, see this on TV anymore. Like, there's no reruns. I don't know if you can... They don't package these for Netflix or anything like that. I mean, in that sort of context, it would be sort of fun to, like, revisit some episodes. With the clips, I mean, the clips are a little bit more like, you know, it's a little bit too concentrated. I would like to see some, like, more episodes where I get to see, like, the whole thing. I like the regular people at the beginning. But, yeah, I think it's rewatchable. What about you, Johnny?
I mean, yeah, it's such a weird question because you're like, who even would rewatch an old talk show? And or even, like, how could you beyond looking at these grainy old VHS transfers on YouTube? I mean, I feel like there was a time where there would be old talk shows in, like, afternoon syndication, that time has passed. But what just shocked me was that when I did sit down and rewatch them, I really loved them, especially that Barbara Streisand episode. I was just like, this is so moving and beautiful, and, like, I can't claim that I'm not enjoying this rewatch. Like, it's delightful to me, and it just made me remember all of these things. Like, she was such a booster of Broadway shows, and, you know, I remember being able to see, you know, the Broadway casts of, like, Cabaret, Chicago. I mean, she got super behind The Lion King and Ragtime and helped, like, make both of those into these huge hits. And yeah, she was a tastemaker, and she was also, like, bringing this world of culture. And I mean, other talk shows weren't doing those kind of performances to my memory. And I mean, then the other thing is, like, she told the world the truth about Donald Trump way before anyone else was ready to hear it or say it. And she was fucking right.
Yeah.
I he's still got
we
a few
all
days
should
left.
Have listened to her.
I think he's really going to turn it around in the final day or whenever this goes up. When did that start? Was that on the Rosie O'Donnell show that she talked about him, or
it was on View? That was when she started to get spicy and give her strong opinions, and, you know, not always the best opinions. I feel like she would get into some, like, 9/11 trutherism that was a little unfortunate. Ooh. But she's certainly spoke her mind on The View in ways that she never really did on the Rosie O'Donnell show.
You know, that would have been an interesting thing to see. I didn't look into how the show responded to 9/11, because it would have overlapped. And I don't have any memory of that happening. We'll look that up later, maybe. I thought it was rewatchable, too. I thought it was a lot of fun for all the reasons you mentioned, Johnny. And it was. I do kind of wish the entire shows could be repackaged somehow. And like, yeah, why couldn't they be, you know, on Netflix or something? I think people would watch them, especially when you get to see like people who are still, you know, big deals now. You know, when you're younger or when they're younger, that's fun. And I think there's also something about like, you know, she set out to capture this kind of like old school talk show vibe, like a Mike Douglas, like a Merv Griffin, like that kind of thing. And I think a lot of people try to do that and latch on to the wrong kind of thing. They pursue the wrong avenues to try and accomplish that. I remember like when Jimmy Kimmel started his show, that was clearly the vibe he was going for. And he had a live show and he got his guests, he gave free alcohol to his guests. And that just resulted in like worse bookings because people didn't want to do a show at midnight. And then like guests were like throwing up because they drank too much. And it was just, it was a mess. And like, that's not what made like that era of television great. It wasn't like drinking and staying up late. You know, it was the, the casual conversation. It was the feeling of not being boxed into like a pre-written conversation. And I think that Rosie just, through her personality, like got to that, vibe very quickly in the show. And I think that's ultimately what people responded to was her character and her natural presence. And I'm sure a lot of that was calculated, was, you know, part of the show's planning, but that's to her credit that, you know, that's hard to pull off, to make a planned, choreographed show feel like it's off the cuff and natural. Like that's to her credit as well. And maybe the whole Tom Cruise thing was an elaborate deception that I fell for, but I still enjoy Rosie O'Donnell. I'm glad she's still around. She did like a charity thing, where she kind of brought back the show during the pandemic over Zoom.
Right. Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It was like a Broadway fundraiser,
I think, right? You're right. Yeah, for like unemployed performers or something.
Great. Obviously, that speaks to her, where her heart lies.
Yeah, so that's great. I'd love to see these episodes in some kind of package form. That'd be great. But I guess that doesn't really happen with talk shows. But again, there's only 6 years of it. So, you know, it could be archived in some kind of fashion and passed on to future generations.
I mean, if Netflix is picking up random old episodes of Supermarket Sweep, like,
right.
I think we've all reached the stage of the pandemic where we're ready to watch the Rosie O'Donnell show from 1996.
I've run out of all the other shows. I can't watch The Office again.
I just thought... And what's another talk show where the opening theme song, every single episode features her singing a couplet about one of the guests.
Yeah, that's good.
How delightful is that? I will never forget, for some reason, when she had Tipper Gore on and said, "Things are looking chipper because I'm talking with the tipper." Like that, wow. That phrase will never leave my brain for the rest of my life.
And that's it for rewatchability this week. thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Johnny, for filling in for Blaine. Do you have anything you want to promote?
You know what I actually do? I have a storytelling piece that is going to be part of the Toronto Fringe and Next Stage Festival's Community Booster event, which I think is going to be viewable for sort of digital on demand from January 21st through 31st. If you go to fringetoronto.com, it should have all the details there.
Okay, awesome.
Neat.
And thank you to all of our Patreon donors. You can find out more about that at patreon.com/rewatchability. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, like us on Facebook, and follow us at Rewatchability on Twitter. And until then, Rob, throw a koosh ball.
That's Foley.
What a cutie patootie.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.